Our bishop has been very busy. The week before last, he sent out an email to all the clergy with a video that he made telling about precautions that we could take to prevent the spread of the coronavirus. And then last Tuesday, he sent out another email to all the clergy, giving us tons of resources, all kinds of links about public health postings and other things to learn about the coronavirus. And then on Wednesday, he sent out another email to all the clergy. And this time he said, I'm requiring of all the clergy in this diocese a number of things. No more wine at communion. Only the bread will be given. No passing of the offertory plates from hand to hand. No water in the font. No Eucharistic visitors will go out to the sick. No handshakes. No hugs during the peace, so we're not going to be touching each other. So I passed all that on to you. Maybe we can practice a little bit here. Jane's going to help me show how we can pass the peace without touching. So come on up, Jane. So one way, of course, is just to bow. Or maybe some people like to put their hands together and acknowledge the other person. Can do a high five without touching.
An air high five,
right? We can do an elbow bump. Be careful with the elbow bumps.
Yeah, you've been coughing into your elbow.
Right, yeah. Or you might try the Wuhan shake. Have you heard of the Wuhan shake? You touch right feet and then left feet. So here we go. Thank you, Jane. It's a new kind of liturgical dance. So things are changing. We have to address the threat that's, you know, here with the coronavirus, and I think our bishop is doing a great job of that. And I'm glad that our bishop is aware of what's going on and he's proactive about it. He knows how important it is for society to react quickly to a pandemic like the coronavirus. Leaders in a time like this must be aware and face the threat. They have to take action, even if it's costly, and they have to provide as much information as possible in order to keep panic down. Those are things that responsible leaders will do in a time like this. And our bishop is doing that. Leaders have responsibility. You know, it's a great thing to be a bishop. You get to wear the mitre and carry the crozier and wear the cope and lay hands on people and all that sort of thing. But it also comes with responsibility. Jesus said, from those to whom much is given, much is expected. Which is something like the lesson we hear in the Old Testament story today. The Old Testament story is a story of calling and of blessing. God calls Abraham to leave his kindred and his father's house and go to a new place that God is going to show him. And he says, I will bless you. I will give you a blessing. And Abraham believes God. And he sets out with all his family and his servants and his flocks and his herds to take this journey that's going to take months and months and go to a place he's never heard about before. And all this is coming from a God that he does not know. Abraham's ancestors did not know God. This is the first time Abraham has heard of this God. But he believes him, and it is reckoned to him as righteousness. Now God calls Abraham and he blesses him, but God adds something to that blessing. He says, I will make your name great and I will bless you, and in you all the families of the earth will be blessed. Abraham says, wait a second, all the families of the earth will be blessed in me? If I'm going to take this journey and take this huge risk, it should be me and my family that's going to be blessed, not all the families of the earth. God says, no, I meant what I said. In you, all the families of the earth will be blessed. You're blessed to be a blessing. It's not just you and your family that's going to be blessed, but all the families of the earth are going to be blessed through you. It's for all the families. In other words, from whom much is given, from those to whom much is given, much will be expected. My dad grew up in a military family, and when he was a kid, they moved around a lot. But when he was a teenager, they settled in San Antonio, Texas, and my father became a Boy Scout. His dad, my grandpa, was a scoutmaster, and my dad loved the scouts. He loved the camping and the merit badges and the meetings and the whole bit, the uniforms. He went to college in Colorado, Colorado State University. He took ROTC, and when he graduated in 1943, he was commissioned as the second lieutenant, and he served in World War II at the last months in Germany. And when he got done, he came back to the States, and he wanted to go back to Colorado. He loved Colorado. So he got a job cutting trees for the ski slopes at Arapaho Ski Basin in the mountains west of Denver. But he broke his ankle, and he had to be the cook for the crew, which he did not like doing. My dad was a small man. He had thin bones, and he realized he was just not cut out for physical labor. So he took one of those vocational tests to see, you know, what he would be good at, and they said, well, you'd be good as a counselor or a social worker or something like that. So he got to thinking, and he thought, Boy Scouts. So he went to the training center for the National Boy Scouts in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and he was trained to be a field executive for the Boy Scouts, and that was his career for the rest of his life. My dad believed in the Boy Scouts. He thought that Boy Scouts made young men into good citizens. And that was why it was an important, it was my dad's calling to do that, because he believed it was so important. In the summers, Dad would be the director of the Boy Scout summer camp. And when I was little, I could tag along with him and be with him. And I remember him talking to the staff. These were young guys who were the camp counselors and had come from college or somewhere else to be the camp counselors. And he'd get in front of them and he'd say, now men, we're here to make good citizens out of these boys. And we're going to do whatever it takes to do that. If it means that you've got to spend an extra hour at the waterfront to help a kid get his rowing merit badge, we'll do that. If it means that you have to carry the kid's pack in addition to yours because he's too tired to carry his pack, we'll do that. If it means you got to hold the bucket when the kid is vomiting because he's sick, we'll do that. If it means you got to pick the cigarette butt out of the urinal, we'll do that. We'll do whatever it takes to make these boys men. And those counselors, they loved my dad because they knew he believed in this. It was important. And then they'd do anything for him. For my dad, citizenship meant that you have a duty to your country. You have a duty to vote, a duty to participate in democracy, a duty to be loyal and honest and faithful. To my dad, our country was blessed to be a blessing. Supposed to be a blessing to the whole world. America is a city that's set on a hill for everyone to see. America is has lit the torch of freedom for other countries to pick up. America is a model of democracy for other countries to imitate. In other words, we're blessed. And we're blessed not just for ourselves, but to be a blessing to the whole world. When I was in Oregon, I was the part-time executive director of Habitat for Humanity. And as part of our fundraising effort, we would have a tour of a home that was like half finished. And we'd invite people to come and walk through the house, and they could see, you know, how the volunteers had framed up the house and put on the roof and nailed down the shingles. And we'd tell them about the program that we had, how we selected families in the community who were low income and who wanted to put sweat equity in to build their house, and how these are low-income people from the service industry, all kinds of people. We had some families that were Guatemalan, wonderful, they're real short people, the brown face of these adorable kids, and they really wanted that house. And we would tell these people on the tour about the finances. We'd say that, you know, we could build a house for about $50,000 in actual cash donations, because we got a grant from HUD to pay for the land. We had donations from businesses for materials and for labor. And of course, we had all the free labor of our volunteers. So it didn't really cost us that much to build a whole house for a family that needed a home. Well, on one of these tours, a man drove up in this huge RV, big recreational vehicle. It was just enormous, just gleaming. And he said, "Come on in, I want to show you my RV." And he gave me a tour. I mean, it was like a yacht in there, gleaming woodwork and stainless steel and everything. I mean, it was amazing. And he said, "Yeah, I had this RV custom made in Junction City. It cost me $350,000. And he said, "I built a garage for it on my property. It cost me $30,000, so I keep this out of the rain in the winter. I got 10 acres out there, so I got plenty of room for the garage." And I'm thinking, $350,000, that'll buy 7 houses from Habitat for Humanity and put 7 families into their homes. He said, yeah, he says, I've been blessed. So he came in and he took the tour with all the other people there, and when he was done, he went out to his RV, and I tagged along, and I said, "Do you think you could give a donation to Habitat for Humanity?" He said, "Oh, sure, just a sec." And he went into his RV and he came out and he handed me a check, and he drove off. I looked at the check, $25. I thought, yeah, you're blessed, all right. But you don't understand that you're blessed to be a blessing to other people, to all the families of the earth. To all the families of the earth. Amen.